Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head. That's not love. That's 3 feet above your ass.
People will come, Ray.
Don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. And broadcast school has really paid off.
Is the nightmare over? Is it safe to come out? Are the Dodgers firmly rooted on the top of the West?
And like a dream, no, they are not. It is the Giants with the best record in baseball going to the last 43 games of the season. We are officially down the stretch. The pennant race has begun, and we are back here at West Coast Bias Baseball Podcast. I am Samuel Paul.
I am Adam Nelson.
And
I'm not
welcome.
Too happy. I'm not too happy yet. We'll see. Since last we spoke, Dodgers have added some much needed, some raw talent, let's say. A few great additions. But we've also subtracted Mookie Betts. And still find ourselves 4 games back as of this recording, I do believe.
Yeah, 4 games back currently.
You know, I'm not worried.
There's nothing to worry about yet. The time to worry is 4 games back with 10 games left to play.
Correct.
Time to worry.
Yeah, I'm sure you're loving it.
I am. I am quite enjoying this the season of baseball. It has been quite the pleasant surprise. Regular listeners of this podcast will know that I did, in fact, pick the Los Angeles Dodgers to win the division. At this point, I may be wrong, and I'm okay with that.
You couldn't possibly be any dumber.
I like it. I like that. I appreciate it. And the thing is, you're right. You're still right. The Dodgers are still going to win the West.
We shall see. I don't know. History... the recent history of the Giants being this far up this late in the season, would suggest otherwise.
When's the last time that's happened? 2012, I think.
2012,
right.
Exactly.
That was a long time ago.
The last time the Giants were actually up in the West by 5 games was actually 2016, though. But that was much closer to the All-Star break, and then they tanked.
Right, right. Well, you know, you don't have to take my word for it. I will take your word for it, because I think you were correct. But how about Baseball Prospectus and the Pecota
projections? Pecota?
Yeah, the stalwarts of the baseball stats world have the San Francisco Giants very high. That's for the projected rest of the season win-loss record. They have them at 96.3 wins. It's pretty damn good. Nobody would have predicted that at the beginning of this
season.
No
one did. The Giants have already exceeded their projected win total by ESPN at the beginning of the season.
they had them at 70 wins.
At 70 wins, yes. And they passed that mark with more than 50 games left to play.
So 96.3 is pretty good. But the Dodgers, according to Pecota, and this is current as of August 15th, 98.7 wins. Now, that has a lot to do with runs scored, and the Dodgers have a projected run scored of 888, whereas the Giants are only projected for 693 with a negative run differential. But the Giants are mashing the ball like all hell and actually hitting home runs for once. First time I've seen it, I mean, since Barry. Really, but the whole team is hitting home runs.
Well, yeah, and saw they were talking about on one of the broadcasts this past week that the last time the Giants had won 70 games in 115 games was in 1993, in which the team ended up getting 103 wins. And missing the missing the postseason to the Braves.
To the
Braves with back an identical when they were in record. The division. in the same division. That year the Giants hit 169 home runs, a total which they have already exceeded this year. And of those 169 home runs, 47 of them were hit by Barry Bonds. And this year, no one as of yet has hit more than 20 home runs. They're
spreading them around.
They're spreading them around quite a bit. There are 10 or 11 players with double digits in home runs. So they're all hitting it. They all seem to be liking how the ball is traveling within the confines of Oracle Park.
They seem to be doing it on the road and at home.
They're doing it both. It's been a prolific home run year for a team that has historically been a home run hitting team. Just haven't had that many in the past decade.
Distant history. Distant past.
Well, the Giants were one of the first teams to get to the 10,000 home runs as a franchise.
Ooh, that's a good trivia question. Yankees first?
I believe so. I'd have to go back and really look at that stat, but I remember back in the late 80s at a game in Candlestick Park when an Otis Nixon hit that 10,000th home run in Giants history. I was at that game.
Real.
So
it may not have happened.
That's pretty good.
Now it's been surprising that the Giants haven't hit a lot of home runs in the past 10 years, but with that drought seems to be over, and it is reflected positively in the Giants' record this year.
And the Dodgers and Giants will only see each other 3 more games.
Yes, very early on in the month of September.
Correct. How's the rest of the schedule looking for both of those teams? I know the Giants may have an easier schedule than the Dodgers coming up.
That's debatable. It is. They are certainly. They both have difficulties in their schedule. Looking at the schedules right now for the Dodgers, after they face the Giants, they will go to St. Louis for 4 games. Then they will come home to play San Diego, which may or may not be tough. Arizona, which won't be. Then they go back out to Cincinnati, and then to Colorado, and then to Arizona. And then they finish off at home against San Diego and then Milwaukee. The Ooh. Last 3 games. And that will be a tough series.
How did the Dodgers end the season?
Well, that was the Dodgers.
Oh, I thought you were speaking of the Giants. Okay.
No, the Giants. Their most difficult stretch, arguably, happens before the games against the Dodgers, where they play the Mets 7 times, Oakland 3 times, and then go to Atlanta, and then come home to play 4 games against Milwaukee. Before then, the Dodgers. Then they go to Colorado, then the Cubs, come back for San Diego and Atlanta, and then go to San Diego and Colorado, finish up at home against Arizona and San Diego.
But by the time the Giants get to the Dodgers, I'm sure the Dodgers will be firmly rooted in first place. And that's probably because of this guy right here. The presumptive Cy Young Award winner. We shall see.
We'll see. I mean, I don't mind Bueller doing well as long as he doesn't get the wins. Give me quality starts and wins because he is on my fantasy team.
Well, exactly. He did not get the win Saturday. However, he did toss 7 innings of one-run ball while striking out 10, as I'm sure you already know, lowering his season ERA to 2.09, which is best in baseball.
If you don't know, folks, Walker Bueller is a good pitcher.
Had he gotten any run support in that game, he would have got his 13th win, which would have tied him for the major league lead. You know, but he's more focused about making the playoffs and then winning the World Series. You know, they asked him if he's thinking about Cy Young, and he's quoted as saying, "We got to make the playoffs. My thing is to be a piece of that equation and push us to where we want to go. The individual stuff is cool, but when the team isn't where we want to be, it's kind of meaningless at this point." He's 5th in the NL in strikeouts, 5th in whip, 5th in opponent's average. He's also 2nd in innings pitched. I mean, the guy is lights out, and it's couldn't have come at a better time, especially with Kershaw still out.
Yes.
With left forearm soreness. I think it's now been classified as elbow inflammation. It's tough, you know, and obviously Bauer out,
right?
So luckily we got one Max Scherzer to fill in the gaps, who will be, as by the time you hear this, fully engulfed in the pitching tonight against a Cookie, I believe, Cookie Carrasco. Now the Mets have a tough road to hoe with 13 straight games against the Dodgers and the Giants. Hopefully the Dodgers sweep them, and then they sweep the Giants. That'd be nice.
I don't think that'll happen.
You never know.
But regarding that that series, I guess Noah Syndergaard had a complaint about.
Well, he's pissed because the Sunday game today.
Right. It will be at night.
It's a Sunday night game.
Right. And then they have to fly all the way to San Francisco to then play the Giants. So I guess they're going to wait until Monday morning to get on that plane to San Francisco. Really? They will come and then play that very night.
Wow. I assume they would just get straight on the plane. Like they usually don't. They usually do that right after a long night game on a long
well,
drive.
That
just get on the plane so you can get acclimated to the. For the time, I mean, it's 3 hours earlier, which is nice, I guess. But
it still, is. I mean, and they don't have
still
to.
Still 6 hour.
They don't have to fly economy. It is a it is a long flight. It is late, and you know, I think with all of the new research and data on sleep analysis that has been happening, they now decide when the best time for sleep to flies, and I guess they calculated that the players will have better sleep if they just go home, spend the night, and then go to the airport in the morning rather than directly from the field.
That makes sense, although it is strange to wake up in New York and then have to play on the West Coast that same day. Doesn't seem smart, although even though they're not flying economy, I guess you're right. The seats still aren't, it's not Virgin or British Airways business class. Although maybe it is. I don't know. I guess my point is it's not Air Force One. They don't have beds.
Right. They would still be sleeping in a seat, which is not the most restful sleep.
Well, and it's not just the Met. The Dodgers have to fly all the way back too. And play the very next day on the West Coast. So,
but they get to be in their own beds at least until it's time to go to the ballpark.
No, they're going to be either at a hotel, like you're saying, or they're going to be on the plane.
Well,
they have the exact same problem.
They've all the same problem. They don't have to go. But my point is, when they fly back to the West Coast, they won't have to check into a hotel. They can just go home.
Well, some people sleep better at hotels than in their own beds. So,
but, I suppose that's possible too. But
now, did you? It's old news now. But did you happen to watch any of that of the Olympics?
You know, I wanted to. I meant to. I did not get a chance to watch any of the games because ultimately I couldn't find them. I had to rely on internet.
Yeah, exactly. It's the easiest time to find anything on the Olympics.
Well, yeah.
Everything's streaming.
I wasn't, you know, when I get home from work, tired and everything, the last thing on my mind was finding Olympic baseball, especially with the Giants playing so good. But I did find highlights and did watch some of it and was following it, you know, kind of from afar, but did not get to watch any of it. That was my point.
I mean, you know. Okay, but I heard that the ball was a hit.
Yes.
No pun intended.
The ball was a hit by By all accounts, the pitchers enjoyed throwing it. The pitchers enjoyed hitting it. It seemed like an ideal ball. How can we start a petition to get this ball implemented into the major leagues? Do you think it will go any way into sort of quelling the complaints and the use of the sticky substances?
That was that SSK ball that you're talking about?
Yeah, this is the SSK baseball.
Made in Sri Lanka, I believe.
Yeah, I don't know. A lot of the specifics are just that it seems to be a good compromise between control of the baseball, flight of the baseball, just makes everyone happy. I don't see how that could be a bad thing.
Well, I mean, we all know that, you know, the Korean balls, the Japanese balls, they're all different. And some say they're even a little bit smaller. So when the Japanese pitchers come into the MLB, it takes them a little while to get used to that, you know, I don't know if these balls are smaller. And I mean, smaller, you know, we're talking, you know, fractions of an inch, but
it's a very small difference.
But still, it is, you know, if you've been pitching your entire life, the tactile sensation you get is almost second nature. You don't think about it. So if there's even the slight increase or decrease, you're going to notice it. And if the ball is a little bit smaller and you've been used to pitching with a large ball, it's probably like I don't know, throwing an acorn or something. You could probably throw like a little BB. It probably feels a lot better in your hand. I feel like a bigger hand is usually an advantage.
Oh, absolutely. As some of the best pitchers that have ever been had enormous hands. I've seen pictures of things, and famously, of course, Johnny Bench wasn't a pitcher, could famously hold 7 baseballs in one hand.
Oh, it was 7? Gee, I thought it was like 5. Wow. Yeah. 7.
Five or seven is still an impressive amount of baseballs to hold in one hand. I struggle with 2 the times that I have tried it, but then I am also not a professional baseball player, unfortunately. But
that is true. But you know, not every pitcher has a giant hand. You know, think of like Pedro Martinez. You know?
Yeah, but he's got big hands. He's got long fingers too. If you ever seen him grip a baseball on camera, you know, he reaches around most of the ball, and the ball looks small. It is only 3 inches across, and the baseball rule book does allow for a small range, but the average turns out to be about 3 inches, and we are talking about a fraction of a half of an inch in deviation. So I'm sure the differences are there. I'm sure that it does make a difference, especially if you're used to throwing a particular type of ball your entire life. I think, though, that I don't know, maybe this is a problem with the uniformity of the particular types of balls. There's less standard deviation amongst a particular brand style of ball. So that when you do touch a different brand or style of ball, that it will feel significantly different. I wonder, before some of the advances in technology that allow for such uniformity now, this wasn't so much of an issue because there's probably more standard deviation against just regular game balls.
Could it also have been the, let's say, allowance of sticky stuff?
Well, I mean, they've always allowed the rosin bag.
I'm talking full on spider tack.
Well, I mean, they haven't been using spider tack for 130 years.
No, I'm just saying, in this last Olympics, you know, could that have been a reason that they thought the ball was nicer? Because maybe, although I guess these aren't like MLB players anyway, so I guess they're not really dealing with that.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't hear anything about sticky stuff in the Olympics.
Well, I don't think they were checking. You know, it's such a big story here in MLB, in the States, in Canada, but, you know, I guess
throughout the rest international baseball hasn't caught on to...
I don't think so. Because the games that I watched, I didn't see them checking the pitchers as they walked out, you know, as they do here. And by the way, did anybody check?
Trevor Bauer hasn't been in the national or international baseball circuits, right?
Well, not recently, no. But I'm wondering if anybody checked the balls last night for Tyler Gilbert.
Ah, I imagine he might have been checked. But yes, what a sensational first start!
27 years old, first major league start. Throws a no-no.
Yeah, he has some. He was in control the entire night. 102 pitches.
Pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Well, you know, a lot of that was that three-pitch eighth inning.
Yes, that certainly helps. So,
that's always going to propel you to.
It's really amazing. Maybe it shows that the Padres are pressing a little bit. But wait, I mean, he looked like he had the Padres lineup just totally uncomfortable and off balance.
He was calm.
And just totally guessing. Oh, he was calm.
Yeah, he looked great.
And under control. He said he realized that he was, throwing a no-hitter about the fifth inning, but was still able to maintain focus even with his parents going absolutely insane.
Well, I don't think he saw his parents going nuts. We all did. Yeah. We all saw his dad losing it. I mean, can you imagine? That's the one thing you always hope to see, and you see it on the very first time he starts the game.
That is pretty amazing.
Now, has that ever happened before? Has a pitcher ever thrown a no-hitter on his first official start? The answer is yes.
The answer is yes. I did see this. In fact, I captured a screenshot.
Happened in 1953, and it also happened in 1892 and 1891. It is worth noting, though, that the mound wasn't moved to its current distance until 1893. So, arguably, you could say it's only happened one other time, and certainly one other time in the 20th century. And that was when Bobo Holloman.
Yes.
1953.
On May 6th. And the other two, just for the record, Theodore Bretenstein, October 4th, 1891. And one Bumpus Jones.
Oh, yeah.
Gotta love those baseball names. Bumpus.
One of the best names.
What a classic
Bumpus, name. Bobo. I mean, come on. Now, what's weird about those two from the 1800s is that they both happened in October. Were they not playing postseason ball back then in October? They were just playing all the
way. I think they may have been, yes.
It was a whole different ball game back then.
It was. I mean, 18, there's a reason why a lot of the statistics start from 1900. Because a lot of the games got standardized.
Well, 1893 would be a little, you know, I'm fine with that. You know, as long as the mound is where it is now, 66, right? 60 feet, six inches. That's fine. Yeah, because before that, you know, I mean, it was anybody's game. You know, but it's still fun to look at those stats because a lot of those teams are still there. Dodgers, Giants.
Either way, whether you want to count those two games or not,
I'm not going to leave out
Bumpus. This doesn't happen. This doesn't happen very often.
I like me some Bumpus. You know, it was the third no hitter in D-backs history. Do you remember the first?
That was, I believe that was the big unit, wasn't it?
Yeah, in fact, that was a perfect game. That was a hell of a game.
Yeah, it was.
0-4. And then Edwin Jackson, no-hit the Rays in 2010, but both of those no-hitters were on the road. So this is the first one at whatever bank, what's the name of that park?
Chase Field?
Chase Field, yeah.
It used to be some bank one ballpark. Bank Field, yes.
Yeah.
affectionately known as the Bob when it first opened. It was.
Is this the year of the no-hitter? I mean, this is eight now.
Eight. This is, it's the second time that there has been eight no-hitters thrown a year, and that was pre-1900.
1884, to be exact. 1884. I mean, come on.
I mean, that's a long time ago at this point. That's 140 almost years ago.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
What's even crazier is that Torrey Lovello supposedly was going to cap Gilbert's pitch count at 85 and then figure it out what the hell. And that's awesome because nowadays you see guys get pulled in no-hitters all the time. This was actually his first complete game as well. And I think the furthest he had ever gone in any division, in any, you know, not division, but level of the minor leagues was eight innings back in 2016.
Yeah, he said that he had thrown a no-hitter in high school, but that was only seven innings.
Right.
So his quote was, "This one takes the cake," which yeah. I imagine it's very true.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of, player... having a no-hitter and then getting pulled. And that same day, Matt Moore was taken out of the game by Joe Girardi of the Phillies after six no-hit innings. The same day. Could we have seen two no-hitters in one day?
I suppose it's certainly possible, but unlikely.
We'll never know.
We'll definitely never
know. Thanks a lot, Joe.
And speaking of...
Has that ever happened before?
Well, two no-hitters on one day? I think that it has. I want to say that it has, but I cannot think of necessarily when that happened. But
Ted Breitenstein, your boy Ted, your boy Theodore, who you just mentioned, and Jim Hughes, April 22nd, 1898.
1898.
So, and then, of course, Dave Stewart and Fernando Valenzuela, 1990.
That was the one I have a better chance of remembering, since I was certainly more aware in 1990 than 1890.
Right. So it has happened. And, you know, for Joe Girardi's defense, you know, Matt Moore has like an ERA of like 7 or 8 or something. So, you know, it was a miracle he made it 6. But still, kind of would have been cool to see too.
I mean, there's certainly has to be something for letting a dealing pitcher deal. I've seen it a lot this year, just watching some Giants baseball. Is that the Giants? It happened just recently in their recent trip to Milwaukee. They were struggling, hitless against. Two Milwaukee pitchers, starting pitchers. As soon as the starting pitcher came out, got to the Milwaukee bullpen, Giants came back and won in dramatic fashion.
And leave him in. Leave in your starter.
Yeah, if he's dealing, let him deal. Don't take him out. Don't take him out until it's obvious that he's not dealing anymore.
Health be damned. You heard it here first.
I don't see necessarily how 20 extra pitches when a pitcher is under control, throwing low stretch, just absolutely dominating a team.
Well, if you can guarantee it's only going to be 20, sure, but I think it's the unknown, uncertainty of, if he gets on. You know, because in that Tyler Gilbert game, Tommy Pham walked three times. You know, the leadoff guy got on three times. Then he faced him for the very last out, which is very baseball. And
he was the only he was the only Padre to reach base.
It was pretty cool, and he smacked that line drive, two outs. I mean, it looked like that ball was going to drop. I don't know how Ketel Marte was just fielding that perfectly.
Yeah, well, things like that have to happen for a no hitter.
Well, they always say there has to be at least one amazing fielding play,
right? At least
there were a few though.
There were a few.
Manny Machado hit a ball, I think, like 110 off the bat or something. I mean, there was something like was it 10 balls hit over 95 miles an hour plus? You know, which is considered a hard hit ball. That's a lot. Yeah, Manny Machado's was 112.2. miles per hour off the bat, just right into the glove. So, you know, defense matters.
It does.
It's pretty cool to see.
That's why it is a team game.
How many people added him in fantasy just over? Just, I mean,
well, I know of one for sure.
Yeah, I definitely.
I mean, it's. I think he got added to a few rosters. I mean, he was that much in control. I've. Like his stuff. I thought, what the heck? I needed a pitcher.
Hoping lightning strikes twice.
I don't necessarily expect him to throw another no-no, but I certainly can see him getting a few quality starts in the last 40 games here.
He may pull off the once considered impossible feat of back-to-back no-nos, Johnny Vandermeer. That's one of the records I do think may be broken, at least before, you know, records like Cal's or even Barry's or...
Nolan Ryan's,
of course, yeah.
The 56-game hitting streak?
56-game hitting streak, sure, yeah. Joe DiMaggio. And then, of course, Pete Rose.
Pete Rose, you know?
Yeah, definitely. So... There are a lot of records that will never be broken, but there are some that could. And back-to-back no-hitters, probably not likely, but it's certainly more likely than any of those aforementioned
records. It would seem so, yes.
Now, speaking of records, we're on Miggy Watch, and Miguel Cabrera is playing right now. It's Miggy Watch. He's sitting at 499.
Yeah.
Home runs. But, you know, on this day, August 15th, 2011, Jim Thome hit two home runs against the Tigers, his 599th and his 600th of his career. Now, it's still 100 short for Miggy, but is today the day? I think it is.
It might be. Now, did you see the? Did you happen to see the video footage of? I guess it was from last night. Miggy hit a deep fly ball down the line, but it went just foul. Guy in the stands got excited and dove for the ball. Just dove in between two rows of seats. Came up with ball and was celebrating like he caught the 500 home run ball. And everyone was looking at him like, "What the hell, dude? That was foul."
He'll have to. I'm sure he wouldn't be able to keep it. I mean, it is his, but they're gonna make him an offer. You know, I'm sure.
Oh yeah. I mean. And he can take or leave that offer, depending on what the offer is.
Yeah, that was the guy, Zach Hample, the famous ball hawk. You know, the guy, he has like over 11,000 right, balls or whatever. He caught Steven Matz's first home. Or no, I guess that was, when was that? That was a while ago. Same thing, he caught, he actually just caught a lot of guys' first home runs. And same thing, it's tough because, you know, the security comes over and is like, hey. you know.
Yeah.
What do you want for it, essentially? But a 500th, that's pretty crazy. I think he, that same guy actually caught Alex Rodriguez's 500th. Or was it his 600th? It might have been his 600th.
It was some milestones, yeah. I mean.
Yeah, that was a big deal. So it's, for me, I would always figure, I'd be like, yeah, I'll give it back if you give me season tickets. You know,
yeah.
Something like that. For life, maybe. Usually they offer you like the bat or a bat, not the bat, but like a bat that like maybe they signed and, you know, I don't know.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
I think that that's a lot of leverage. It'd be pretty messed up to keep it, you know, because it should be maybe in a museum or maybe in the guy's house. It's not
in the guy's
record.
House. If it's the first home run, it's in the guy's house. If it's the 600th, right. 500th, maybe in a museum.
Yeah, although 500, you know, I mean, sure, that's great, but, you know, you're not breaking any records. Right. Now, Miguel Cabrera is sitting at 499 career home runs. Only four guys in history, in MLB history, are in the 500 home run club with a higher batting average than Miggy, which is currently at 311 right now. That would be Ted Williams, obviously, number one.
That makes sense.
344. Babe Ruth, right below him, at 342.
I don't think he gets enough credit for being just a good overall hitter.
Yeah, Barry never hit 300 in his career. So,
no.
You know,
no,
just,
he didn't.
Just saying. Jimmy Fox at 325. And one Manny Ramirez.
Manny being Manny.
312, baby. That's Manny. Yeah. Oh, man, Manny. You remember that first season? I'm just going to reminisce on that first half of season.
I remember the wigs.
You should have got MVP.
I remember the wigs.
That year. That would have been like one of the first times ever where a guy played on two different teams in two different leagues. Should have got MVP. Those numbers are insane that year. Anyway, to go along with the 500 home runs, Miggy is sitting at 2,950 career hits. Is 3,000 coming this season? 3,000 hits plus 500 home runs in the same season? That'd be pretty cool.
That would be very cool. I mean, I imagine it's possible.
You know, that would put him in an elite club. 300 average, 500 home run, 3,000 hit club.
Yeah,
there's only two guys.
There's
that are
not
in that
very
club.
Many. I can't, I
even Pujols isn't even in that club.
Yeah, that's geez, good. Ted Williams got to be one of those.
No,
huh?
500 home runs? No, 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 no,
no,
no, no.
500
home runs, man. That's a lot.
It is.
You got to play for a long time.
Yeah.
So
the Hank Aaron.
Of course. Yeah. When in doubt, if it's a batting stat, Hank Aaron.
Yeah.
He of course had 3,771 hits, which, you know, just seems impossible nowadays. And then Willie Mays.
Yeah.
With 3,283. Yeah. Batted 302. That's elite company. You know, we were talking about Albert Pujols last time with the 6,000 total base club. And that was a very elite, same thing. I think it was the same guys, actually.
It makes sense.
Yeah. That'd be cool to see Miggy in there. I'd like to see it happen today. And by the time you're listening to this, who knows?
And so is Miggy a Hall of Famer?
Yeah, Miggy's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
I mean, again, look at that. If he finishes his career batting over 300, you know, has over 500 home runs, 3,000 hits. I think 3,000 hits is kind of like 3,000 strikeouts or whatever, right? If you hit that benchmark,
it's automatic.
You're in. Yeah.
The same way that 500 home runs has been.
Well, Palmeiro?
Well, I mean, this has been, as in not currently, because it has been seemingly tainted.
It's 500 home runs
still,
is different than 3,000 hits, though, I think. I think 3,000 hits is harder. I mean, I know it is. There are fewer guys, I think, that have that. Actually, I don't know that. You should fact check me on that. But I think, you know, hitting 300, getting 3,000 hits, has always been, I mean, 3,000 hits.
I mean,
but batting 300
traditional
was and always was and always should be the ultimate goal of any baseball player is to bat 300 for your career, right? nowadays.
Right. Well, it's not, I mean, that is the benchmark of success was
right.
3 out of 10 hits.
Now, I do believe, so the other benchmark nowadays is you got to have a 70 plus war. Your war has got to be around 70 or higher. Otherwise, you're not going to make it. There are very few guys in the hall that have less than 70 as a war. Now, Miguel Cabrera in his career is currently at 69.1. So he's already basically there just with his career war, you know, sitting at essentially 70. Although in 2021, he has a negative 0.2 war. So he just needs a couple more good seasons, or at least just one more decent season. Or if he gets to 3,000 this season, you know, maybe he can retire. It's been 19 years, man. He's been playing 19 seasons. His first year in 03, he only had, he's only in 87 games. But yeah, that's a Hall of Famer. You know, Buster Posey, on the other hand, I don't think so. But that's a whole different argument. Kind of do a heated discussion with somebody about that.
Yeah, it is. It is certainly a different, different ball wax.
I mean, Miggy's career stats are just insane, though, man. When you look at the stretch from literally 2004, where he hit .294, all the way to 2018. Or 17, he only had one season where he hit under 300, and that was he hit .294. I mean, it's a lot of black ink on that resume. I would like to see it. Now, maybe a Hall of Famer in the mix, Shohei Ohtani. How's he doing this year? Because I guess we're always on Shohei watch, right?
Shohei watch, I did find a good stat. Shohei Ohtani has a 173 OPS plus and a 155 ERA plus this year. So
pretty damn good.
Yes, and to put this in perspective, Mickey Mantle had a career OPS plus of 172, and Pedro Martinez had a career ERA plus of 154. So basically, if you took an average year from Mickey Mantle and an average year from Pedro Martinez and put them together, you get Shohei Ohtani's year.
That's pretty damn good.
Those
guys just hitting like on an average day is better than most people's best day. So
right. And that's kind of the point. I mean, Mickey Mantle is one of those all-time names that everybody knows. Pedro Martinez is getting there. I mean, certainly
every baseball fan.
Every baseball fan knows, but
yeah.
I mean, maybe we'll see. Maybe in 50 years, Pedro Martinez will have a name like Mickey Mantle's. But
he should. I don't think he will. It's just different. Mickey Mantle. You know, his name is Mickey. I mean, it's everybody knows that.
Well, yeah, and again, it goes back to these great baseball names. There are some guys who just have great names.
Yes. G-Man Choi. I love that name. I don't know why.
What about Oil Can Boy? Do you remember him?
What was it?
Oil Can Boy.
Oh yeah. Oil. Yeah, but that wasn't his. That's like Catfish Hunter. I was like, that's not his name. But there's Socrates Brito. Remember him? He's kind of recent. He might still be playing. You know. Yeah. There's a lot of good names. And speaking of good names, maybe guys that we should be stashing in the future.
Beer.
Yeah. How about we get a little Seth Beer? Are the Diamondbacks going to bring up Seth Beer? Is maybe the best name in baseball right now?
I don't know.
It feels as if he should have been up months ago. He's been raking in AAA, and Christian Walker is middling as the first baseman for Arizona. But I think Beer can also play the outfield. He has a 402.521 slash line right now. He's hitting 300 since the beginning of July. A 950 OPS. Only four qualified first basemen have posted a 950 OPS this season. Now, will he be able to mash at the major league level? I don't know. I just want to see Seth Beer in a Diamondbacks uniform before the end of the season. And if he does, you know, might want to pick him up in fantasy league, you know. The guy can hit. Plus, he's got a cool name, you know.
Yeah, easy to remember.
Yeah, kind of like Doug Fister.
Oh, really? That one's an easy one for you to remember, huh? So I have found here that there are 32 players with 3,000 hits.
Okay. How many have
500 home runs?
Yeah.
For one reason or number, that stat has not, like, come up. I was looking for the official list. Well, I have been looking, and it just did not come.
What are you talking about?
Come up.
It didn't come.
It didn't come up quite as easily as 3,000 hits, and I am not exactly sure why.
Okay, let me just let me count. I'm not going to be here all day counting, but it looks like there's at least 29. 30 guys. So how many guys? You said
32.
Okay, so it's about the same.
It's similar. It's a similar type benchmark.
But you know, Sammy Sosa has over 600 home runs. He's not a Hall of Famer, you know.
Well, but his name has been tarnished. Same with Mark right, McGwire but, and
yeah.
Rafael Palmeiro. Those guys you.
But Sammy is a career 270 hitter, you know, or 273 or whatever, you know. I mean, it's not bad. He's got an 878 OPS career. It's definitely not bad.
I mean, it's safe to say that if you get both of these stats, you should be in the Hall of Fame without even...
If you get both of the stats, obviously, but he only has 2,400 hits.
Right.
So if you have 3,000 hits...
That's 600 hits more.
Right. And, you know, say 300 home runs... That to me is more valuable than a 600 home run guy hitting, you know, 260 or whatever, you know.
Right. But, well, no, I mean, and it just goes to how you value the bases. I mean,
McGwire, that's another one. He's got 583, you know. So yeah, I think hits are still generally looked at as more important. In terms of baseball writers in the Hall, but maybe things are changing because home runs are up, strikeouts are up, hits are down. So,
yeah, and guys like Mickey Mantle and Joe DiMaggio, they just didn't strike out because they didn't want to. Right. And now, I mean, the attitude has totally changed. Guys don't mind if they strike out. I personally always hated to strike out. I didn't want to do that. I wanted to get the bat on the ball, and you know, if I was going to be out, I wanted to fly out or line out. You know, I didn't want to.
Yeah, watch. That's why the best hitters don't always make the best coaches. Like Barry Bonds is. Infamous stint, one-year stint with the Miami Marlins.
Yeah, it didn't go too well.
It did not go well at all. A lot of the gripes from management or, you know, from the team, besides the fact that he wanted, like, over $1 million, which, like, no other hitting coach was getting. He had, like, a whole series of, like, you know, food demands and all this, was that he was just not that good at coaching because he would just tell the players, don't swing at the slider. And they'd be like, well, it's really hard to lay off. He's like, yeah, don't swing at it. It's like, well, thanks, coach. I'm not you, you know.
Now, whatever you do, don't strike out.
Yeah.
Don't swing at the balls out of the...
No, that being said, that was like 2015, I believe. And so, you know, there was Christian Yelich, you know, Giancarlo Stanton, Marcelo Ozuna, you know. Those guys went on to have really good, I mean, Ozuna notwithstanding, you know, Stanton, like, near MVP the next year, and then Christian Yelich, back-to-back batting title, you know, with Milwaukee. You know, maybe they did learn something from him.
I mean, I know that he's had quite influence on a lot of left-handed hitters that had played with Barry or were with the team around the same time that Barry was. Just because he did have this an innate ability to be able to identify pitches early, which I know really helps with being able to lay off.
Yeah, just ask the Astros. Yeah.
Exactly.
And that brings us to this week's Ignoble Award of the Week.
Well, let me guess, an Astro?
Would that it were, and I wish, although I did give him hell a couple weeks ago. I finally got to see them.
Oh, yes.
Finally got to see them
you,
in person.
Did you tweet out that picture of you? You should have. If
you're right, I should have. I don't. Yeah, I always forget about Twitter. That being said, remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com, Twitter at West Coast Bias BB. But no, sadly, the ignoble award goes to my guy, Ramon Laureano. Come on, Ramon. What happened, man? You're killing me.
On such an obvious substance. So one of the substances that have been on the banned substance use for one of the longest times.
It's like one of the old anabolic steroids or whatever. He denied that he knowingly took the banned substance. Now, for those that don't know, he's done for the season. 80 game suspension.
He's gone for the rest of the season and for the first part of next season.
He said he was shocked. Now, I guess that's maybe what you would say no matter
shocked.
What. Shocked. He was quoted as saying, "I have worked too hard and given too much to the sport to disrespect or cheat the game that I love. I would never do anything to dishonor my family, teammates, and coaches, or do anything to let down the many young ball players that look up to me. I take great care of my body and have an extremely regimented diet. Based on the minuscule amount that was briefly in my body, I've learned that it is likely that it was the contamination of something I ingested." Now, I don't like that. I don't like that part at all. You know?
Yeah.
Come on. That's the Canelo Alvarez excuse. Oh, yeah, I had some tainted meat. It's like, did you though? You know?
Yeah.
You're a millionaire. Like, buy some good meat. Yeah. You know? Buy some locally raised.
Yeah, you have such a strictly regimented diet. How did that banned substance get into that regimen?
Yeah. You should have a dietitian. You should have like all kinds of stuff. Now, maybe they did it. I don't know. Maybe I'd like to give them the benefit of the doubt.
Just complaining about some soreness in the muscles, so you know, sprinkle a little powder onto the salad with the salt. I don't know.
Now, A's, you know, could there be a little bit of a conspiracy here because you know, the A's have Starling Marte,
who they got in
the end of July, and he was suspended for 80 games for the same substance in 2017 when he was a Pirate. Damn you, Marte. I'm doing my little fish shake here. Was that him?
I don't know. I remember some...
To your newsletter.
Local talk radio, a few days ago, talking about, well, you know, it's likely that the A's knew that this was coming. And that went to explain some of their actions right there at the trading deadline because they
I'm not gonna go that far. I don't know. I hope that's not true, but
well, I mean, A's, if you believe Jose Canseco, is where this whole thing kind of started, but
but Laureano, man, yeah, it's tough. I have him on my fantasy team. I had him on my fantasy team.
Yeah,
it's all right.
No reason keeping that roster spot plugged.
Well, not now when I have 11 guys with red letters by their name. Good Lord, man. It's a tough season. It's a tough year. Keep going up and down on first, second. It's tough, man. It's kind of like maybe the Dodgers and the Giants right now.
Yeah. Maybe it is, but there hasn't been a lot of back and forth.
Don't blink yet. Well, okay, yeah, all right. That's true. But... Yeah, you know, the Dodgers have won 8 straight.
No, it's gonna be fun, very interesting, and likely very stressful coming down the stretch. It's gonna be a lot of fun. You know, while it satisfies us to talk about the Giants-Dodgers race, there's going to be some interesting races other parts of the league as well.
Who are you looking at? The East, the NL East with the Mets, the Braves, and...
Well, yeah, there's going to be a race there. There's going to be a great wild card race, probably between the Yankees and the Red Sox as well, if you care about such teams.
I hope they both get in. I hope they both get the wild card. That'd be great. And I hope that the A's obviously win the West.
Right. We hope that the Yankees and Red Sox both get the wild card, but only if the A's win the West.
Correct.
Because otherwise, it won't make any difference. The idea is that we don't want the Astros to make the postseason. That would be the best scenario.
Nobody does. Unfortunately, Pecota has Houston winning 96.9 games and Oakland at 91-1. But on a lighter note, they have the Dodgers on top of the Giants. So, you know, take it for whatever you will.
These things are known to be wrong. So it's possible that they're overestimating both the Astros and the Dodgers and underestimating the win total for the Giants and the A's.
I hope you're right. Let's get to trivia. We're getting a little long here. Unless you have anything else to add, right?
I know. Back in 1964, at a batting practice, then Giants manager Alvin Dark said to Harry Jupiter of the San Francisco Examiner, said that a man will land on the moon before Gaylord Perry hits a home run. Well, so a few years later, about 5 years later, July 20th, 1969, at 1:17 p.m. and Pacific time, Apollo 11 landed on the moon. About 30 minutes later, Gaylord Perry hit his first Major League home run.
Wow.
So he was right on with that prediction. So, yeah.
Wow.
That was probably the most entertaining fact that I had found in the last few weeks.
Nice. Wow. I mean, where's he at now?
Gaylord Perry?
No, Jupiter.
Jupiter? I don't know. He was a reporter for the Examiner in 1964.
Give me some winning lotto numbers.
The paper doesn't exist anymore, so, you know, who knows if Harry Jupiter does.
Hoo-ah.
Now that brings us to last week's trivia question. Last week's trivia question. June 6th, 2021, the Red Sox won their 1,000th game. Is that true?
That is true. Against the Yankees. 1,000th game against the Yankees. Not ever. That would be bad. Especially since the Red Sox have been around for so long.
The Yanks were the first to win 1,000 against the Red Sox. In what year did the Yankees get their 1,000th win against the Red Sox?
Yes, and of course, the bonus points if you knew the date of the game. But
wow,
did we get any guesses? Any good, correct?
Yeah, Mark in Pleasanton says, honestly, don't care. 2002? Question mark.
Yeah, no, like, but not I, too far off. That
kind of like that attitude. No?
No, it was not. It was.
This
it
is
was,
your
it,
question.
So. It was before 02.
All right. And then Taylor S. in Oakland says, Yankees, Red Sox. I thought this was West Coast bias. 2005. So, yeah, no, they're rightfully pissed. You know what? You're right. Well, what do we do? Oh, wait. 2005?
No. I said it was before 2002.
Oh, okay.
So it was earlier than that. And I realize this isn't a West Coast thing, but sometimes I have a hard time finding a question that is geared towards the West Coast that is interesting like this. That might stretch not baseball knowledge. And it's just an interesting fact. I thought, maybe someone knows. Is someone paying attention?
They're paying attention, and they're restless. and they're not too happy, apparently. No,
they won't be happy about my question this week
either. Okay, Blair from Dallas, Texas says, I'm assuming late 90s, they beat up on the Sox all those early Jeter days.
Yes, I would say that you are close with late 90s.
Okay.
It is, in fact, late 90s, but that's not a year.
All right, so what is it?
Yeah. So the date that the Yankees won their 1,000th against the Red Sox franchise was May 29th, 1998. So, 98, that's your answer.
1998, all righty. What? No winners, no dinners. You know, the side note, the Giants-Dodgers crossed the 1,200 threshold each. Mm. In the 2010s.
Yes, I remember this happening. And I know they're very close in terms of records. They're within 100 games of each other.
Yeah, after thousands of games. I think it's like within 40 or 50. I think it's like, it's, I might even be like 20 or 30. It's something crazy. I had that written down and then I lost it. I don't know where that went.
we'll have that for you next.
Remember to email us, baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. Leave the answer on the Podomatic website in the comments. Apple, I think you can do comments on there.
Yeah.
Probably. Twitter. Yeah. Tweet Twitter. West Coast Bias BB. What do you got for me this week?
Well, this week, who has the most gold gloves in Major League Baseball history?
And you just gave a little hint too,
possibly, but also it caught this player, you know, for a lot of years also played in the National League West, so you know, could be, it depends on how you count such things, but
I think I have an idea.
You think you have an idea? Okay. Right. Well, if you have an idea, like Adam just said, email us, hit us up on Twitter, Podomatic website, Apple website, Facebook. There's a lot of ways that you can submit your answer.
Yeah, let us know. Questions, comments, observations about life in general. We'll be back soon. On that note, Sunday is coming out. It's going to get hot.
Yes.
This box, this room, the studio is just begging for us to go leave and drink some beer. So on that note, from San Francisco, California, I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul. And remember, baseball is life. The rest, just details.
Go watch some baseball.